It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, a law firm right here in the LA area. And today, as usual, I'm here to be the managing partner of your life. Unfortunately, I don't think I can manage my own life, so please do not take any advice. It's been that kind of day.
Oh.
And Lawrence Avon, I was about to say that I was going to be flying solo.
You were about to be flying solo.
I was about to be flying solo.
But like a superhero, I showed up in the nick of time.
How did you show up in the nick of time?
It was just a series of coincidences that allowed me to be here on time.
It wasn't on time, by the way.
I wasn't on time. But
you were late.
As far as our audience knows.
Yeah, they don't know.
They have
but
no
I'm
idea.
Pointing it out that
thank you.
You just ran into the studio about 30 seconds ago. And at least they let you in the building. I mean, my day is so bad. I can't get into this building. It's virtually
Fort Knox,
impossible.
This building. It's very difficult to get into.
You have to know
a password and a special handshake.
No, there is no way I can get in. I don't know who works the show. They never tell me. So I text about six people, and most of them are sleeping they're not at the studio. And I sat outside waiting for you when you weren't coming for about 20 minutes.
Of course.
And no one would let me in.
Right.
And here I am. And then we find out that our guest cancels.
Alan, what a day. You're not kidding.
I mean, you think, if you're listening, you're driving in your car, you're at home, you're in your garage doing some woodwork.
As you do.
As most people are.
7 o'clock at night.
Maybe you're eating dinner and you think hosting a radio show is just such a glamorous job.
Easy, right?
And so easy. Mm. Forget it.
No.
We had Fran Drescher, the nanny, booked for about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks. And last night, I put my kids to sleep after Hudson had a hockey practice. Then I took them out for dinner, and we had a great time. Harper and Hudson were hanging out, and I went to put them to sleep. And then I go to work on preparing the show, learn everything possible about Fran Drescher, stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning. I was not watching old episodes of The Nanny. But I'll tell you, I had a mediation today. I had a settlement meeting, a deposition, and I had to get everything done last night and stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
Because I didn't have chance to even look at this show. And I wanted to make sure that the nanny knew that we knew everything about her.
Right. We prepare.
Yeah. And what happens?
This afternoon. Yeah, you know what? I can't do the show. By the way, we should mention to the audience, when we say a guest cancels, it doesn't mean like, oh, I can't get to the studio. I can't physically be there. It's not about, you know, transportation issues or traffic. She can't make the phone call.
Right.
That's all we ask. Just call in at this specific time so we can chat with you.
And, you know, I took that very seriously. So you texted me today and you said you can't make the phone call. That's what the point you were making. I thought it was a great point because I'm in meetings all day long.
Yeah.
And I can take a break. You know, I'll say, hold on. I got an important call to make. I'll call you back in 5 minutes. I was on a long meeting for an hour and a half. I needed to make a couple calls.
Right.
I got off the meeting. And the fact of the matter is, even if you've committed for, let's say she committed for a half an hour, if she says to us, I can only talk for 10 minutes because I'm really busy.
Got it. Yeah.
Fine. Step out of whatever you're doing for 10 minutes and say, I'm running for SAG. Is it SAG-AFTRA?
Yes, yes.
The union, of course.
Elections.
Yeah. And I want to tell you about my platform. I want to tell you why I should be elected, why Tom Hanks is supporting me, and why all of these other
people. I'll tell you what. I hate to say this, but as a member of SAG-AFTRA, this doesn't really give me confidence in her ability to lead.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I mean, she may be a great leader, but, you know, it gets back to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Do you mind if I bring up Kareem?
Always gets back to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Can I bring up...
He is the bête noire of this show, isn't he?
He is. This morning I woke up. Little did I know that Fran Drescher was going to cancel on us. But I woke up and I read the first thing I read, and I always read in the morning because I want to know what's going on. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in the news. There was an article he was quoted in talking about the Jeopardy host and how irresponsible it is.
Interesting.
For Jeopardy. Irresponsible for Jeopardy to have, you know, Mike Richards. And then, of course, he pulls out because he's got some sordid past.
Yeah, podcast comments came back to haunt him.
Exactly. And he is, Abdul-Jabbar is talking about how morally right it is for Jeopardy to have the exact host that he believes, you know, whether it's a minority or whatever, justice, because his whole life is about justice and about being a good person and doing the right thing. Yet for two shows in a row, two this year, he just canceled at the last second. No excuse. No excuse. He couldn't call in and say what kind of just guy he is and what kind of morally correct and right person he is. Because these people aren't. They don't understand what other people go through. In law, it's called detrimental reliance.
Oh, interesting.
Detrimental reliance.
And what does it mean?
You rely upon the word of someone.
Right.
And do something as a result of those words.
I see.
To your detriment.
Huh.
And that's what we do when we prepare a show. And when we have a guest, we advertise. We spend money on social media promoting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's appearance or promoting Fran Drescher's appearance.
By the way, so that they can promote their own causes.
Exactly.
This is a vehicle for them at the end of the day.
And I am the wimpiest host ever. I don't cross-examine these people. I don't piss people off.
Right.
Everyone loves my interviews because I suck up to them. Mm. I kiss up to them.
Not a lie.
And you know, because you can't stand it, you watch me.
there are a few times I want to throw a hardball question.
You throw the hardball question. You know, there she is looking like Farrah Fawcett, Major. And for those of you who are over 40 years old, you probably don't know who that is.
I do. Everybody knows who Farrah Fawcett.
You know, you're not wearing the bathing suit with, you know, any type of protrusions going on.
Thank you, Alan.
But
clarifying.
You look like it. And you're throwing the hard balls, and here I am, the trial attorney, who just goes and says, oh, you're the most wonderful person in the world, and these people will not come on the show.
Alan, what if you didn't show up for trial? You know what I mean?
I'd be sanctioned.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like this business, and believe me, I worked in broadcast news for a long time. There's no downside for celebrities or any, you know, when they cancel a show and they give you your word that you'll be there. Now, of course, there's always, you know, circumstances that they can't make it. And that happens. But to make a phone call and give your word and then just not show up, and it's nothing to them.
They are
and
too
there's no
good. They're too good for that. Because I'll tell you, some of the guests, and we've had over 500 guests on this show over the years, and some of the guests would never cancel. Never. It doesn't matter what the excuse is. They just wouldn't do it. And a lot of them, yes, are lesser known people because lesser known people don't have as much opportunity to do media.
Right.
But at the same time, it talks about who you are.
Definitely.
I mean, I remember I used to work at NBC, and I remember as a young lawyer seeing the difference between Jay Leno and David Letterman.
What was the difference?
Can I say that? I can't say the F word. Okay. Unbelievable.
I don't think so.
No. Unbelievable.
which
unbelievable.
Word?
Yeah. Jay Leno would take such an interest in everyone who walked the halls of NBC. He'd say hello. How's it going? He'd make conversation. He'd make jokes. He was one of us. Or we were one of him. David Letterman, no chance. Eyes straight ahead. Don't you dare talk to me. Don't even think about saying good morning to me.
Wow.
Don't you think about talking about it. I am too big to talk to you peons.
I would use the exact same example when I worked at Fox News Channel. Sean Hannity, nicest guy in the world, knows everybody's name, my mother's name, my friends, my family, always asks how you are. Bill O'Reilly would not even look in your direction.
Well, he would look in your direction, but that was for a different reason.
Correct,
to see if he could get into your pants.
But I was like in an elevator with him by myself. Not only did he not look in my direction, he got off the elevator first.
Wow.
No chivalry. That's just my story.
But I'll tell you something. Doesn't that tell you something about
Who they are? Yeah, as a person.
I mean, you don't have to like what Sean Hannity
Right. We don't agree on 90% of everything that comes out of his mouth, but he was a lovely person to work with.
Next week, we're having Larry Elder on the show, assuming he doesn't cancel. And my bet... My bet is that he won't cancel because Larry's been on the show before.
And he's had a show. And he knows what it's like to have a radio show and have people last minute cancel.
Larry is a good guy. Regardless of what you think of his politics, or even if they're not politics, I'm not sure what they are, his opinions, because I don't think he sees himself as a politician. Mm-hmm. But he is a stand-up guy. And people can criticize him all they want because... he says one thing or another, and we're going to talk about it next week when Larry's on the show. But at the same time, from what he has shown in the past with our show, completely respectful, ready to go on the show, has his talking points, entertains questions, is cordial, always when he comes in studio, always a good guy. And I can't say that about a lot of people.
Unfortunately.
You know, we've talked about Gloria Allred before, being that kind of person.
She is that kind of person, yeah.
Always respectful. She treats people like they are all equal. And that's one thing I can say about my late dad, that when I did the eulogy, one of the things I pointed out, it didn't matter to him who you were, how much money you had, what your status was. He treated everyone the same. And that's what I think is such... a great quality.
Integrity, yeah.
In a human being. So as I mentioned, we're going to take a break now. Fran Drescher isn't with us. But maybe in the future she will be.
Right.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is not with us. Chances are he won't be. If you have any leftover questions that you wanted to ask Frank Motek for Motek on the Money, call us, 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. If you've never been on the radio before, here is your chance. In the next 15 minutes, you can say anything you want. We will entertain anyone who calls, 800-222-5222, and we'll even give you a little candy.
What? Is that a euphemism?
No.
Oh.
No, I have in my pocket a little Twix bar.
Oh.
And I'll send it to anyone who calls. No.
Okay.
It might melt.
Yeah. It's hot out there.
Let's hear what the hot air is of people listening. 800-222-5222. I'm Alan Gervey. She's Lauren Savon. You're listening to Gervey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Yeah, this reminds me of my old DJ days when I was on the Princess Cruises in the nightclub, in the disco.
Were you a DJ on a Princess Cruise?
Oh, yeah, for 2 years.
Really?
2 years.
What was that like?
That was my law school job. Going through law school, I actually worked on a cruise ship as a DJ. All my friends were clerking and were doing all this stuff for lawyers.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was going... you know, and I don't remember all the words. It was too long
ago. But what was the most requested?
I was spinning records. I was learning how to, I learned how to mix. And it's a really interesting story how I got there. Because I was in acting school at the time at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Wow.
And there was a notice on the board that said, we're looking for personalities. So what I did was I said, I'm a personality. I'm going to try out. So I went down to Long Beach, and there were 200 people who showed up to try and get this job as a DJ on the cruise ship.
Really?
And I didn't know the first thing about music or about DJing, about records. And in those days, it was all spinning records and mixing and doing BPMs, beats per minute.
Yeah.
I knew no clue. Fortunately for me, the interviewer was only interested in your personality. They didn't care about your skills. And I lied my butt off.
You acted, some would say.
I did act. I said, yeah.
acted
I,
like a DJ.
I was a DJ. I could do all this. They never tested me. Within 3 days, I was told I was being shipped off to Fort Everglades to get on this Fair Sky. At the time, it was a Sitmar ship called Fair Sky. It was bought by Princess in Port Everglades. They sent me there. I called my parents. I said, I'm leaving for 5 months. I'm a DJ on a cruise ship. I was supposed to be in law school. And after acting, I had flunked out of acting. I went to American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
I love how you flunked out of acting to go to law school.
I went to one
failing backwards.
I went to one audition, and the person said I was terrible, and I cried. I said, I'm going to law school. That was it. I gave myself one audition. Went into DJing. I had my parents had applied to law school for me. I didn't know about it. They wanted me out of that DJing business. Got to Port Everglades the first week. It was spring break. It was March. Millions of people. They were playing these songs. Everyone was dancing. The DJ before me, who was leaving the ship, was the studliest guy. He was with six girls in one night. He'd go off with girl after girl after girl.
Wow.
And I was sitting there by myself, and I'm like, I can't do this. It's a long story. I went up to the top deck. I was going to jump and say,
what?
You're
going to jump off the cruise ship?
Yeah, because I lied. And I didn't realize that there were going to be 2,000 people waiting for me to spin records.
How hard is it? You throw a record on, you walk away.
Oh, no. You have to do all this stuff and you have to keep it going and everything. I learned to talk on the microphone back then because I couldn't do the cues and I couldn't slip disc and all whatever the heck they were doing there. And so I would change records by talking over the change, whereas you're supposed to have the beats
right
into
of course.
Each other.
And that's a nice save.
And it was horrible. Thankfully for Norman Lawson, he was the stage director who knew how to be a DJ. He took me every afternoon for that week, taught me what a record was, what a 16-incher was. I didn't know what a 16-incher was. I thought that was like a porn star. But I found out it was a record that you played and it went on forever. He taught me what to do. He helped me. He actually spun the records in the first few days for me. I made it. It's a crazy story of success where I became one of the most successful DJs at Princess Cruises for 2 years.
Wow.
After that, I still couldn't spin a record, but boy, did people love me. I played all of the requests because the other DJs would not play the requests. They were going to play whatever they were going to play. But when someone came in and said, can you play Jump by the Pointer Sisters?
I was like,
okay, I'll play Jump. Can you play Celebrate by Cool and the Gang? I did all that. I was like a bar mitzvah DJ.
I love a DJ that takes requests.
Yeah, I took all the requests. They loved it. I mean, and I didn't play any of the cool music. But anyway, what do we want to hear?
I would love some Pointer Sisters if you got any back there.
Jump?
Jump's a classic.
Yeah, it is a classic.
Gets you excited.
Let's get excited. All right, anyway, we need to move on. You said during the break we were talking about Sean Hannity. And by the way, if you just joined the show, this is Gervie's Law. We do not have our guest friend, Drescher. You might have seen it on social media that she was going to be on the show. She pulled out.
I mean, I could do a Queen's accent if that's what we want.
You can. Can I interview you?
As Fran.
Now, I hear you're a Broadway actress as well.
Where did you hear that? That's absolutely not true.
Aren't you doing a Broadway show?
Oh, am I Fran? As Fran?
Yeah, you're Fran.
Oh. Is she in a Broadway show? I have no idea.
You didn't do the research. You didn't stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning researching the nanny is going to be a Broadway show.
I was reading her platform about running for office for SAG-AFTRA. Yeah.
And what is the plot? Like, isn't it just a popularity contest like everything?
No, there's a lot of issues here that
we need
to work on.
But they're the same issues year in and year out.
That is true. But
better pay.
No, but there's a lot of new rules with all the streaming now. You know, streaming's kind of taken over instead of broadcast. And so you need to update all of the residuals for people. I mean,
so why don't you elect someone who's like 35 years old and understands what streaming is versus a 65-year-old nanny?
Well, this would be a question for Fran Drescher.
Franny the nanny. Well, she's not here, so hopefully she'll come back if she doesn't listen to the show. But I must say, her publicist is great. I don't know who it is, but she was very apologetic. Genevieve Wong, our producer, said that she's a wonderful, wonderful publicist. Not her fault. The 10-minute phone conversation just couldn't happen today. So if you want to come, we Should we take some calls or not? What do you think?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Tony, you're in Santa Clarita. What's up?
Hey, I got a question about campaign finance law.
Sure.
Larry Elder said that he's gotten $10 million in contributions so far. If he doesn't spend it all, does he get to keep it?
Mm.
So I know Larry personally, and I know that he has a book he wants to write. And I think that this has been a great fundraising campaign for him so that he can write a book.
But does he get to keep all that money?
Yeah, that's what he's going to do. He's going to use the money. Yes, when you contribute...
It doesn't go back to the party or...
buying a concert ticket.
It's not... Exactly. That's a great example. Green Day's coming up at Dodger Stadium. I'm taking my 7 and 8 year old to Green Day. We have front row seats. We're going into the mosh pit. A little concerned, but I paid a lot of money for the tickets. So Hudson and Harper will be at Green Day. I can't give them back. I can't say, well, you know what? We decide we're not going to go. The money is gone. I can sell it. But in campaigns, it's not based on success or not. I had a client the other day who said, if you're not successful, I'm not going to pay you. And guess what I said? I don't care about what you say because you pay me regardless. We don't guarantee results. So when you contribute to a cause such as Larry Elder, it's not based on whether he wins or loses. The money is gone, and hopefully he will use it for good purposes.
I was thinking about that, too, because Cuomo had raised all this money in his war chest, and now if he resigns, he just keeps it?
Well, you know, the right thing would be to donate money to sexual harassment.
That would be the right thing, but...
You know, there's a lot of things you can
I just
do.
Wasn't clear if it goes back to the Democratic Party in New York or...
Well, it could go, depending on, I mean, Larry Elder isn't, you know, representing anything other than his radio show.
representing a Republican.
But the point is that, you know, people don't contribute. If they're contributing to a party, that's different, but they're contributing to a specific person. Tony, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. You know, the fact of the matter is there's a lot of money that changes hands, and I'm sure that there is some funny business that goes on with where money goes.
I'm sure.
But
without a doubt.
The idea would be to try to use the money in your campaign and finish off with a zero balance.
Right. That you rarely know, does that. I mean, usually.
It's not fundraising.
You don't finish with. You finished before you run out of money.
But you should definitely try to plan out where you're using the money appropriately over time so that when the election comes up that you finish.
Right.
Are we going to talk about MoTeC on money?
Are we? Didn't we just listen to
his
show?
I mean, he talked about Bitcoin.
Oh, I didn't hear, did he?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Yeah. Well, he was talking to some people who have, they're talking about Bitcoin machines. So you can go like an ATM.
Yeah, you can get Bitcoin
and do that. But, you know, that's kind of boring.
I know
you're
not.
30 seconds.
You're not a believer yet.
Are we going to take this next call?
You're not a believer.
In 30 seconds? It doesn't look like it. Well, because I'm sure it's long-winded.
I say we take a quick break. We start fresh with the caller when we come back.
And then we got to talk to Simone de Munoz.
Right. About man flu.
Man flu.
I'm dying to hear what that is.
Man flu. You want to hear what man flu is? You want to know about Simone de Munoz? Stay tuned to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right, Lauren, you're
this
getting
is it.
This is it. I feel like I'm still a DJ for Princess Cruises.
Jumping for My Love?
Yeah. I'm watching everyone on the dance floor. Coordinatedly jump in when they say jump.
That's right.
You remember those days?
Of course, yeah. I had a bat mitzvah.
And this is what they played?
Yeah, of course.
You're not that old.
That's very kind of you to say.
You know, I'll tell you, this was the most requested song.
Was it?
Yeah.
Really? Jump by the Pointer Sisters.
Uh-huh. And celebrate.
Fantastic.
Good
they had good taste
jump.
On those Princess
Cruises.
And there
were a couple of Madonnas, too.
Oh, can't go wrong with Madonna.
No. Like a virgin.
Huge. That was a life-changing album for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's when women take over the world.
That's right. Excellent segue to our next guest.
It is an excellent segue. And by the way, I'm really honest. People don't think that I'm honest. I tell the truth.
Who doesn't think you're honest?
Well, I'm a lawyer. But I tell the truth. And I got a text from my assistant, Claudia, who does an amazing job of preparing me for these shows. And she said she bets that there is a melted Twix bar in my pocket.
Okay, first of all, it's Twix, not Twixt. So, and yeah, if it's been in your pocket, it's definitely melted. I mean, that's a pretty good bet.
I'm perplexed. Or is that perplex? Yes, and she's right. There is a melted
Sometimes
Twix
I think
bar.
You're suffering from man flu, Alan.
Can you talk about man flu? Because it is incredible that a first novel by Simone de Munoz has gotten so much attention and has been so timely. We can't believe that she wrote this book, her first novel, before the pandemic started. And Lauren, you are so intrigued by it. The reviews have been great.
So here's the description of man flu. Following a global pandemic, which has either killed or weakened most of the male population, women now dominate all aspects of life. Hey-o.
But that's how it is anyway. I mean, you haven't been married.
Well, let's talk to the author.
You've been in relationships. You dominate.
Yeah. And how do you know?
Because you're a woman.
Well.
I'm suffering from man flu.
I want to find out. Yeah, you're obviously in a weakened state right now. It's affecting your brain.
My legs are crossed.
Let's talk to
Simone
the author.
Simone de Munoz, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure, Alan and Lauren. I'm really delighted to be here.
What an incredible idea that you came up with. I mean, obviously, pandemic, that's on everybody's mind, but that it just affects the male population. How did you come up with that?
I actually started writing the book in the summer of 2019.
And oh, so before all this?
Yeah, before COVID, before everything. And the idea was really a way to get men out of the way. Sorry, Alan.
I'm used to it.
It was in the time of Me Too, and men were screwing everything up in leadership roles. And every day it was another man in the news having to step down because
Still
of
is.
Kind of Me Too allegations. So the book the idea was to have this pandemic that only affected men, get them out of the way, and allow women to take a turn running things.
And without giving away too much of what goes on in the novel, what were some of the results of that you came up with that people probably didn't think about?
Yeah, so I have a policy background. I actually have a master's in public policy, and I really thought through the policy implications of having fewer men in all aspects of life. So if there are fewer men, there is less of a military, less of a need for that military presence, fewer wars, and we can save that money that goes to the military and spend it on other things like caregiving assistance for families. And so that turned out to be important in the book. You know, if you really think through what happens when there are fewer men, when there are fewer people in general, maybe we don't have climate change issues, less violence, all of these things that you can do a thought experiment. And that's what I did with the book.
It's a really fun thing to think about. I mean, reading the reviews, it really makes you think about a lot of different aspects of life and whether or not we need men in the first place. As I'm talking, Alan's eyes are glazing over. But
sorry, Alan. No, in the book, we do kind of come full circle, and there is a role for men. We do love men, and there's definitely a purpose for men.
You know, it makes me think of the book Lord of the Flies. And in that book, there was certain expectations that the kids would have if they were ruling, if they had the conch, and they would be able to create society that would be successful. Not understanding the obstacles and pitfalls and the disaster fiasco that resulted. Is that something that you considered when, you know, you do away with men? Maybe women would just have a tough time without men. Like maybe they would be fighting over, you know, what mascara to wear or...
Okay, that's really sexist.
And the book
yeah,
isn't?
I'm not a big... not big on mascara. No, actually, it's 10 years after the pandemic. So in my view, that 10 years is that time of those negative effects and society having to sort itself out and, you know, a new leadership to be established, women having to retrain in jobs that are typically held by men, like mechanics or trash truck drivers or whatever. That kind of gets sorted out in those 10 years. So I'm kind of after that point where it's a new order.
I see.
Where things are more stable. And the book focuses on relationships between people. The politics and the changes to society are more, I would say, in the background.
Interesting. You know, you said you came up with this idea during the Me Too movement. And, as someone who was active during that movement, I always would think about these types of things, particularly when it came to politicians. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, the Anthony Weiner scandal where he's sending photos around. And I was,
great documentary, by the way.
It is a good documentary, but you don't see a lot of women with that kind of behavior. I mean, it's just not in our nature, really, to do that kind of thing. And I always would think if we had more women in politics, there'd be a lot less of that type of behavior. Now, don't get me wrong. Women can obviously be corrupt. Women can do a lot of other bad behavioral things. But it does take that, I think, that one aspect out of the equation, where it's very rare that you see a woman constantly sending off photos of their genitalia.
It's so strange that you say that, because I look at men and women as equal, and mm-hmm. I treat them equally at my law firm. And I don't think one is any different than the other, at a woman attorney versus a man attorney. I've always felt that way.
Good.
So I don't have the same kind of feeling where you categorize and you stereotype and women being different. I think women...
It's not about women being different.
I think it's about the person, about who someone is. If someone is a corrupt politician, I think they're a corrupt human being, whether they're a man
or
a woman.
Of course. Corruption is not what I'm talking about. I just mean this, you know, if there was a female governor of New York, let's say, I don't know that she would be glad handling people and like Andrew Cuomo's accused
of. Or like Hillary Clinton.
It's just it's not something that you hear a lot of women doing. Yeah.
So do you share that?
I agree
Simone?
With you, Lauren. I do agree.
And why is that? Have you done some research or have some understanding? And I know your public policy degree is from UC Berkeley, and you have a bachelor's degree in economics from MIT.
Impressive stuff.
Yeah, but why is that? Like, when you're writing this book, are you focusing on these stereotypes when you get rid of men?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I was trying to write really full and rich characters without falling back on stereotypes. So mm-hmm. I had in the back of my mind, you know, these are things that we know about society. And, you know, you may say that you treat men and women equally, and you may do that. But in society overall, there's a lot of studies about unconscious bias, and people do treat people of different genders differently, even without realizing it. So that was all in the back of my mind as I was writing it. But I was focused on, let's make this character really interesting. Let's see what happens to her. The main character is a vaccine researcher who's seeking the vaccine to prevent more cases of man flu, because she does love men. She has a husband she loves and more interactions with men as the book goes on, but she doesn't want mankind to come to an end.
Right.
She feels that it's important that men do have a place in society. So, I was focused on her journey as the main character, you know, a novel
Simone,
to focus on a person. Yeah.
Are you Dr. Morgan Digby?
Oh, absolutely not. No. She makes some choices that I definitely would not make. Characters have to be flawed in fiction, and there are a lot of points where she does things that I would say, no, stop, don't do that. You know, in my own life, I'm more of a responsible, straight-A student type of person. And she definitely veers off the path a couple times.
Now, a lot of people, and we only have 30 seconds here before we need to take a break, but a lot of people have said the book is very well written and that for a first novel, it's very impressive. Have you had any detractors because of the subject matter or because of the pandemic that we're experiencing now that may cast a shadow on the book?
No, I think people are super interested to read it because it is so timely. No, I haven't experienced that at all.
Well, that's in 30 seconds.
Yeah,
you
no,
have something to say,
I
Laura.
Do, but we'll take
say
a quick
it.
Break and
ten seconds.
I will. Well, we'll do it on the other side of the break. We're talking
but
to Simone DeMunez, who is the author of the new novel, Man Flu.
You're
we'll be right back
me.
After this. It's Gervie's Law. Madonna.
Yeah. Now, do you think if there were no men around, this song would have more meaning?
Oh, I know a lot of men that love Madonna.
I'm not talking about Madonna. I'm talking about this song particularly.
Oh.
Like a virgin.
Yeah, well, the men and women can be virgins.
Well, yes, but a lot of women who may be heterosexual may end up being virgins if there's not a lot of healthy men around to keep their interests.
I see.
So I'm not sure who'd be like
an interesting...
virgin. I have a twist on it, but the book is called Man Flu. We're talking to Simone DeMunez.
The author.
It's a debut novel. It's by Acorn Publishing. You can find her on Instagram at Simone DeMunez, or obviously you can get the book on Amazon or any other retailer of books.
Mm-hmm.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're now going to hear from Lauren Savon, who teased us.
Oh, stop.
Before the break.
No, Simone, I have a question. You know, I obviously haven't read the book yet, but I plan to. What are the roles for, is there any, do you address transgenderism in this book at all? And does that affect who gets the flu and who doesn't based on their biology?
Oh, that's a question I haven't heard before. The man flu is based on chromosomes. So it's people with XY chromosomes
that are
susceptible to it. Yeah.
So it's a chromosomal thing. Now, I got to ask you, because we're just going to ask you a couple questions. We'll get back to man flu. But you did a piece for Scary Mommy about how you plan to raise children. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I just thought of it when... Lauren talked about transgenderism.
Yeah. And actually, I wrote another piece about a friend of mine whose child is transgender, too. So I've been writing a lot of essays about gender and parenting for a couple of different sites. The Scary Mommy essay was about how I'm raising my kids, who are 7 and 10, to be able to ask questions and be open about talking about sex, and how I was raised with the don't do it, and you're not allowed to date until you're 25, and let's not talk about it, and it won't happen kind of attitude, and how I think that pushed me to doing things that were more dangerous because I couldn't talk to my parents and made some less than smart decisions.
But why is that so different from other parents? I mean, I have a 7 and an 8-year-old, and clearly the way that I grew up having no discussions about sex is just from a different era, and you can't escape it with social media and everything.
Yeah, I mean,
the kids are getting
exposed. They don't need to ask their parents. They can Google everything.
Our dog Fuzzy's humping the pillow, and they're asking, you know, what is that protruding thing coming from his body? What am I supposed to say? You'll learn about that with the birds and the bees in school. Like, I don't understand why that's different.
I guess some parents are still uncomfortable and don't want to talk about it. And maybe they are relying on the internet or the school or somebody else. And they think somebody else is going to be having those conversations with their kids. And I'm not willing to do that. And I was trying to show in my essay what can happen when you don't talk to your kids about it. And I mentioned, you know, that I was 13 years old wanting to go on a date with a 16-year-old and just hopped in his car. And, you know, luckily nothing bad happened. But that's because I was curious and I couldn't have those conversations at home.
I mean, it is a different world than when we all were growing up. But, you know, I did have to ask questions to other people. We didn't have the internet. How do you kind of navigate that as a parent now? I mean, it's great to have open communication with your kids, but if they're not using it, if they are relying on whatever they see online, do you kind of go in and ask them questions?
Well, I think you look for situations where you can raise certain topics. Like I mentioned in the essay, I had a friend who became pregnant and it was unplanned. So I took that as an opportunity to explain to my kids, even though they're young, that if you don't want to have a child, that you need to use birth control and there are options available. Of course, I wasn't going to tell my seven-year-old every single birth control option that exists in the world, but just that it's something that you can prevent and that there are ways to do that. And we can talk about that more as time goes on. So just looking for those opportunities to talk to kids in a age-appropriate way.
Like when Fuzzy is humping the pillow. Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that I bring up, but if it happens and, you know, when you have kids at this age, things happen.
And they have questions.
And I think we have to respect children. But, you know, there is a point where you do, I believe, have to draw the line between parent and child. This isn't just hanging out with your friends and having free discussions. Don't you think, Simone, that you do have to establish the difference between a parent and a child when you're addressing some of these issues?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't talk to them about my, you know, sex life or personal experience or anything like that. I mean, there's definitely a boundary there. But answering any questions they have and raising things that happen in the world, I think, are fair game.
Do your kids have any idea what your novel is about?
They do, actually. They were listening in on parts as I was checking the audiobook recording, but I had to make sure it was chapters without any but yeah, they've heard parts of the audiobook.
I'm so glad you brought up the audiobook because it just came out this week. And for those listeners who can't read
or who spend a lot of time in the car like me, I will be downloading the audiobook.
So it's perfect. How can they get the audiobook that just came out this week?
Yes, I know. It was such great timing to be asked to be on the show this week. It's on a number of retailers, including Audible, Amazon, Kobo, Google Play, and probably forget Chirp. You know, it'll be on more in the next few weeks.
I really can't wait to dig in, Simone. I'm going to pitch this book at my next book club meeting, and
yes,
hopefully
it's
I'll have
a perfect book club book.
Yeah, and because you can tell it will spur a lot of conversation, which we love. So.
And do you have any plans for a sequel, like, for instance, that there's Woman Flu and the Dogs Take Over?
That's a good idea. I'll put that on my list.
Yeah.
And I do want to say that for book clubs, I did join a book club that was discussing man flu, and it was really fun. So I'm definitely open
to we're going
to
have you zoom in for sure and answer some of our questions when we read it.
Do
that
you
would
have
be really
people
great.
Zooming in on your book club?
Yeah, we do. Well, since the pandemic, not everybody can come to book club, so
that's perfect, and Simone could do that.
Exactly. It'll be really a treat.
That, you know, and I think a lot of people have book clubs. This is a perfect
thing. It's a perfect book club because we're 50-50 male-female in this book club, so it'll be a good discussion.
And also, it's so topical for what's going on and what has been going on, because a lot of people who are fearing when we talk about vaccinations and other things, they fear consequences, what's going to happen 5-10 years from now. And this book actually deals with some consequences.
It gives you a lot to think about.
Of a pandemic.
For sure.
So we want to wish you all the best with the book, Simone de Munoz. The book is called Man Flu. You can obtain it anywhere.
That's right. And the audiobook now, too.
And the audiobook. So good luck with that, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Alan and Lauren. It was really a pleasure.
Great to talk
to
you,
Simone. All right, good luck. Wow, we got through. I was going to say a Barry Manilow song.
Go on.
We made it through the rain.
Okay.
You're not a Barry Manilow fan.
I don't know all of his hits, no.
Yeah,
I'm more of like a Dean Martin Sinatra fan.
You are? I was such a geek that I took...
A Copacabana, of course, I know.
I was so nervous. I asked Meredith Berkman at Brown University to go to a Barry Manilow In the Round concert.
Wow.
Yeah. And
was it a sexy time for you guys?
No, she hated me.
Oh.
I think she just...
Did she love Barry Manilow?
She wanted to hear some Barry Manilow, I guess. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to do in Providence, Rhode Island, so we walked down the hill from Brown and we went to this Civic Center, and you know, she never spoke to me again after that. One time she did. We were at a dance and she asked me to watch her purse when she went and danced with another guy.
Oh, boy.
So that was about the best I got from Meredith.
Boy.
And she later, if you look her up, she did this whole lawsuit lawsuit against Pirate's Booty, saying that it was fake.
The snacks?
Yeah, saying that they were fake.
Fake what? It's cheese puffs.
Yeah, but she said that there was false advertising.
Let's get her on the show. I have a lot of questions for this woman.
I'd be so embarrassed. She wouldn't know who I was.
Well, she'll find out very quickly.
She wouldn't remember the Barry Manilow concert, and I did end up making it through the rain on that one, but, you know, I will tell you... I've had some really bad experiences on dates.
I think that that is an entire show that we should explore further.
I sound like a stand-up comic saying, you know, folks, I just
You're
had
like,
a lot of bad experiences.
Women, am I right?
We're not going to be talking about Jackie Mason, are we? Didn't we really beat that
a few weeks ago? We got it all out last week. Yeah.
It wasn't last week. It was a few weeks ago. Don't remind me about last week. Yeah. Raul Felder was on the show, and we talked about Jackie Mason. So,
that's right.
Yeah, that's about as much stand-up as we can do. And next week, Larry Elder.
I'm really interested to talk to him.
Anyone taking bets? Will he be here?
Oh, I say he will. He's a man of his word.
I think so. I really think so. And we're saying it on the air. Don't miss it. He's got a lot to say. And if you're undecided,
you're going
to
want to tune in.
You want to tune in. We want to thank everyone for listening today. Sorry we couldn't come through with our Facebook and Instagram and Twitter ads for Fran Drescher. Was not our fault. Lauren, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Listen to this song, one of my favorites.
Bring you back to the bad date with Meredith.
Barry Manilow, Meredith Berkman. Have a great week. Looking forward to seeing you and hearing from you next week right here on Gervie's Law. Always standing bar across the crowd.